and thank heavens for that.
The dresses are so jolly, said 10-year-old Anne-Marie wistfully. English, please, mimicked Albertine in heavily accented English.
Anne-Marie's spectacles wobbled on the tip of her nose. Rachel pushed them up for her.
You're right, Ammy. The dresses are jolly, and I don't see the harm in looking, so long as we stay out of sight.
It was the annual Easter ball at the Château de Bruyac, home of the Comte de Bruyac from time immemorial, or at least as long as anyone had stopped to think about it. The Bruyacs generally didn't. They preferred to spend their time in Paris, where the Count could concentrate on his amours, and the Countess on her close, personal relationship with several expensive couturiers, all of whom vied for the honour of upholstering her angular frame. When the Comte and Comtesse did return to Bruyac, it was on a wave of strong scent, accompanied invariably by a party of persons from that alien and sophisticated world. Rooms would be aired and dust sheets thrown off, and Amélie, Anne-Marie and Albertine would creep down to their favourite viewing post, 5 balusters to the left at the top of the gallery. A more superior sort of governess might have told them no, might have shooed them away back to the nursery. But Rachel had never seen the point in crushing all the joy out of her charges' lives. And if looking down upon a sea of perfectly coiffed heads made them happy, what was the harm? If they showed any signs of mischief, she would sweep them away, back to the nursery. Rachel doubted it would be necessary. Neither Anne-Marie nor Amélie was the water balloon-dropping sort, and Albertine's own particular brand of malice took less physical forms. After 7 years of nursery governessing, Rachel counted herself something of an expert. Anne-Marie and Amélie were pressed close together by the balusters, Albertine lurking behind, trying to pretend haughty indifference, although her eyes were as wide as the others. Rachel joined them at the rail, spying shamelessly. What was the point, after all, of living in the houses of one's betters if one couldn't enjoy a little vicarious glamour? Below, the great marble stairs had been banked with flowers. The Count and Countess, the latter decked out en grand tenue, diamonds glittering everywhere diamonds could possibly glitter, stood receiving their guests. The hall where Amélie liked to go sliding in her stockings on rainy days was busy with the high chirp of voices, the clatter of beads on silk, the flash of military orders. Somewhere, Rachel knew, beyond the gallery, there were musicians in the ballroom. There was a supper laid out in the dining room, and other rooms devoted to cards or repairing one's gown, and heaven only knew what else. But all that lay beyond, out of view of the balusters.
When I am grown, said Amélie complacently, I shall go to a ball every night.
Rachel stifled a grin. Yes, I expect you shall, but only if you remember to wash behind your ears. Clean ears are crucial for countesses. Amélie's spine straightened a little.
But of course, she said grandly,
as though she hadn't raised holy hell in the bathtub yesterday when confronted with the dreaded washcloth.
And many jewels.
Rubies or emeralds? Queried Rachel. Her own jewellery consisted solely of a small gold watch, pinned to her bodice, which her mother had given her as a gift when she graduated from the high school. Rachel didn't like to think of how many extra piano lessons her mother must have taught to purchase it, how many days without sugar in her tea. But it had proved rather useful for regulating lessons. There was nothing like frowning ferociously at one's watch for making restless schoolgirls settle in their seats.
The blue ones, said Amélie firmly, because they match Sophie's sash.
Sophie was Amélie's favourite doll, dressed in Paris best, rather battered from being placed in situations no Paris couturier had ever imagined. Sophie led rather a rough life.
Why not? Said Rachel.
Goodness only knew the rich tossed away money on lesser whims, and Amélie someday would be expected to marry a grand hotel in Paris, a chateau in the country, and a suitable accumulation of porcelain and gilt work. And presumably, the man that came with it all, although that appeared, from what Rachel had seen over the past 7 years, to be a lesser consideration. Sometimes Rachel felt like an explorer, surveying the customs of an exotic and isolated tribe. Sometimes. Most of the time, she simply accepted her salary and concentrated on clean ears and the past perfect tense. Rachel had always known she would have